Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Gabriel Iglesias. That's Gabriel Iglesias if you don't have an accent. And you are watching Todo Latino. Es Todo Latino on Todo Wafi. That's right.
All right, everybody, you're tuning in to the Todo Latino show from Pro Audio LA. I am your host, Rafael. That is Daisy. We have Yovi. And in the house, our guest is Mexican-American comedian who has been seen on Comedy Central, Netflix, the only comedian to sell out Dodger Stadium. Welcome, Gabriel Fluffy Iglesias. What's up, man?
Good morning, good afternoon, or good night, depending on when does this air?
Good question.
Good day, everyone. Buenos días, buenas tardes.
Yeah. From every interview that we have, we always have like an origin story. I want to learn yours. I know you're from Chula Vista, the youngest of six. Raised by a single mom, what was that like?
It all started many years ago. My mom cracked a beer, and 9 months later. Origin story. I'm from San Diego, California. I was born in Chula Vista, July 15, 1976. My mom is from Sinaloa. My dad's from Jalisco, and the two of them met at a nightclub because my father was performing. My father was a mariachi, and my mom was a fan. And the two hooked up 9 months later, and you got this guy right in front of you right here.
Hey.
I was the product of fun, and my mom says love. She says that, mijo, I made you with love. And I said, well, what'd you make my sisters with? And she said, tequila. I was like, okay, good to know.
You're like a brownie.
Good to know. Yeah, something like that, right? But no, again, I'm here from. I'm a California guy. I'm born and raised, and I've lived all over California, but I can't seem to leave. Mm. You know, and I currently live in Long Beach.
Yeah, I came here when COVID was like right at the peak, so it was like shut down.
But you left where to come here?
I left from New Jersey.
Okay.
The thing about California is you can go to the snow one day and then the beach an hour later, and then you go to the mountains, and then you can go to, like, you can go anywhere.
We got everything more or less here, right?
Yeah, New Jersey, you just got to wait for the right weather. It's like a seasonal, so it's like the only time it still takes you an hour to do anything, but you got to wait for the right season in order to be able to do all the stuff that she's talking about.
So I want to know, growing up when you were in middle school and high school, were you the class clown? Were you always this funny?
No, I'm actually, if you guys didn't notice already, I'm very quiet, and I'm not trying to be the center of attention unless it counts. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm on stage, it's my thing, you know, but when I get off the stage, the last thing I want to do is be loud, over the top, and entertaining. I'm like, how about you entertain me? You know what I mean? It's one of those things where when I was in school, I was just always, I want to say, a good listener. I was always very quiet, and people are like, is something wrong with you? I go, no, I'm just taking it all in. I would observe things, and then when I had the chance to talk about them, I would in detail talk about all the things that I would see. I feel like if you're someone who's spending too much time being the center of attention and being loud and over the top and always needing to run your mouth, you miss the opportunity to learn. It's when you listen that you learn, and when you run your mouth is when people go, oh, yeah, I can learn from not doing that.
What comedians, you know, you grew up with, you know, that inspire you to, you know, get this going? Your craft.
The funniest person I knew was my mom. And of course, with as far as stand-up goes, Eddie Murphy, Robin Williams. I would even say a little bit of Bill Cosby before the thing. And because, you know, nowadays you can't mention names because people get erased. But yeah, I mean, I've been doing this now for 27 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 27 years.
When did you first realize, like, I'm going to be a good comedian one day?
When I got paid. When I got my check. Una feria. Toma, mijo, come back here.
At what age did it start that you started, like going towards comedy?
Well, when I was 10 years old, I did a school talent show, and I knew that I was onto something. I didn't really know that I was doing stand-up. Mm-hmm. I was just really good at doing character voices and impressions, and I did the talent show, and I was just doing, it was a 10-year-old, and I was up there doing just voices and cartoons and stuff, and people were laughing and applauding, and I'm like, is this the reaction I'm supposed to get? Because I didn't know what the reaction was supposed to be. And I told a joke. As a 10-year-old, I told a joke. I said, why did the chicken cross the road? And people are like yelling out random things. And I said, no, to check out the chicks. And everybody's like, oh my God, he's still killed. So back then, I got the bug for it. And then it wasn't until years later that I had an opportunity to really try to just, all right, we're going to call it stand-up comedy. Let's try it. Let's do it. April 10th at the Golden Sales in Long Beach.
Mm. How did that go?
Nice.
Was it a good night?
You know what? A lot of times people say, oh, the first time was really rough, uncomfortable. It was bad. I didn't like it. I can honestly say that I was amazing that night. I really was.
Wait,
first
how old
time,
were you?
I was 8, 9, 20.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you got 20. A good run.
Yeah, there was probably 13 people in the audience, but it must have been, to me, it could have been 10,000 because they were laughing so hard. And I had such a great experience that I'm like, are you kidding me? This is the best thing ever. And then I tried it the following week and I died a horrible death on stage. It was bad. It was just.
You bombed?
Yes, I bombed really bad. But the good thing is the first time went so well. It was one of those things where I'm going to chase this. I think that if the first time out, it would have been really bad.
You decided to challenge yourself?
I guess, you know. But I knew that, okay, if I could do it once, I can do it again.
You can definitely do it, like, multiple times.
Yeah. But if I would have bombed the first time, then I probably would have, you know, like, lick your wounds and then go back to the day job. But, yeah, at the age of 20, that's when I knew, okay, all right, we're gonna call ourselves this, because I firmly believe you need to give yourself an identity. You need to say that you're doing something and that you are something and then go for it. Yeah. And then a lot of times, even if you aren't, you fake it till you make it, and you manifest and you put that energy out there, and then you chase it.
One of the things I really inspired by is your branding.
Yes,
like you got the whole fluffy version of the Jordan logo. When did you guys come up with like the branding for it? Once you developed that, you figured, okay, I'm now doing this as a career. I need to go into the branding side. At what point did you guys make that switch, where the branding was like a really key part?
I think I got into the idea of branding when I started selling merchandise. And the first thing I started selling was CDs. I was selling CDs. I'd record my shows, and then I'd have a CD, a company that I would pay to duplicate the CDs and stuff. And then I would sell them after the shows. And my friend Martin goes, dude, you should sell T-shirts. And I'm like, why T-shirts? He goes, yeah, people want T-shirts. I go, but Martin, it cost me 75 cents to reproduce a CD, and I sell it for 20. And I go, a T-shirt costs what, $4 or $5? And it's still for 20. I go, it doesn't make sense. And he goes, but people want more shirts than they want CDs. I go, that's ridiculous. And he goes, just try it.
Yeah.
And I did. And the T-shirts outsold the DVDs. So moving forward, I was basically using my catchphrases from the show and putting those on the T-shirts.
Yeah.
So when did Fluffy come into place, like the name?
The Fluffy name came in actually very early on, but it wasn't until I met a friend of mine by the name of Jim Whidbey in El Paso, Texas, who taught me about collectibles and branding and marketing, because he worked for a marketing company there in El Paso, and he taught me about algorithms and about consistency and about having your not only a name but a visual form of representation, so that even if people can't hear you, they can see something that will make them think of you.
Exactly.
And then learning about brand association. Brand association has been one of the biggest things, because I feel like if you associate yourself with a brand, people will automatically click to every time, you know, people see Volkswagen buses, they're like, oh, like Fluffy's buses, or a can of Diet Coke. Oh, he likes Diet Coke, or Chihuahuas, or Hawaiian shirts. There's so many different things that I've made it. Tequila. First thing I did when I walked in, you said, we got tequila. We know you like tequila, because, again, you got to be consistent and let people know these are the things that you're all about. I'm all about wrestling. I'm all about tequila. I'm all about Volkswagens. I'm all about Diet Coke. And so brand association, and just being aware that if you have a brand and you have a logo is very important too. So the idea was, you know, originally it was like a spoof, like, the Jordan thing. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But then it's like, we don't want to run into a situation where there's legal issues there. So, of course, there's rules about changing logos and stuff like that. And I says, how about we don't even go that route. We just do an actual silhouette of me, not nothing that's modified. Just do me. And it was like, that didn't sound right. But in the logo, I had, you know, at the time I had a flat top, basically fade. And so in the logo, you could see the little spiked hair. That's before Mother Nature got a hold of my genetics here. But we did, you know, it's like, hey, I'm holding the microphone. It's almost like you're leading a charge, you know. And so that was the idea behind that, versus dunking a ball. There was a lot more meaning behind that logo. And then, of course, I'm not leaving the ground. Big dude like me trying to leave the ground. My feet are firmly on the ground in the logo. But I'm leading this comedy charge. Mic. And so that's where that came from. And then we just, you know, try to make that, incorporate that into everything. Everything got that. And then everything had the name Fluffy attached to it. So it didn't matter. You know, I got a car. It's the Fluffy car. Oh, you know, it's the studio. No, it's the Fluffy studio. Yeah. So you keep, you're consistent. You got to keep putting it out there, and it's going to drive people crazy. But you have to condition people to know that that is your brand. That is, you just got to constantly get in their brain. I learned this from watching wrestling. Wrestling is very much all about breaking in new ideas, new gimmicks. And the first time you see something on wrestling, a lot of times if you're a big fan of it, you're like, that is so stupid. What are they thinking? Yeah. I can't believe they did that. And then you watch it the next week and you're like, they're still trying to do this dumb stuff. What the hell? Third week, you're like, I can't take this anymore. And eventually you get used to it. They condition you. And that's one of those things where that's why I tell comics or anybody in show business, if you want, don't constantly try to reinvent yourself. Give people a chance to get used to you, because if you're constantly changing, you're just starting over.
Know. Exactly. Yeah,
you're
they don't
resetting
know.
Yourself.
They're not relating. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like that because I do remember you by your Hawaiian shirts. So it's like your brand.
Hawaiian shirts, shorts. And then once the hair started going thin, I started wearing the Kangol. I started wearing the Kangol hat. But I'm 47. I don't care, man. I got to, you know.
I feel like this is the only thing anybody knows me for. So anytime I'm at premieres and stuff like that, I'm like, oh, Rafael.
That's very consistent and it sticks out. Yeah.
I literally wear it everywhere. So everywhere I go, I just have the hat and everybody's. I found all my Puerto Rican friends here in LA because of that.
There you go.
They were like, that's you're a Boricua. Then she knows. We go to premieres. Like,
they'll
be like,
hey, you, what is that?
So it's very cool. I want to pivot a little bit to film and television because I know that, I mean, your career has been phenomenal. I know you started doing like Nickelodeon, doing some sketches. I think it was with Amanda Bynes. That was All That, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, 2000.
Yeah, then Family Guy. You were on Family Guy. Modern Family has to be my favorite because that was just funny as shit. You're on Coco.
Oh, we can cuss. Cool.
Yeah, you can. All right.
Just don't overdo it.
There was a few times where I was going,
No, dale. You can just go. Magic Mike. Then you have Mr. Iglesias on Netflix, which I enjoyed. Netflix. And then Space Jam, A New Legacy. This might be a dumb question, but which one do you find more difficult? Acting side of it or like the comedic side of it?
The hardest part is definitely doing the stand-up because you got one take. You got one chance to go out there and, you know, you're the director, the producer, the actor, the writer. You're everything right there. Whereas with a TV show, especially like a sitcom, you can do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 takes and it's like, okay, we didn't get it right. Well, let's do it again. And people are conditioned for that. So when you're taping and you got a live studio audience, all right, folks, we're going to do it again. And it's like, okay, they're going to do it again. It's not a big deal. But if you were to do that in a comedy show like stand-up, you guys, I messed up the punchline. I'm going to start over. People are like, what the hell is this? This is weird. You know?
They'll start throwing tomatoes.
Yeah, that's old school. That's way back in the day. But no, so for me, doing stand-up is probably harder.
Probably the hardest?
Yeah, but you know, it's a little bit different too. Doing a sitcom or film, you don't have an audience there to judge you and be like, oh, we got to wait for them to do it again. Film is actually probably the easiest because you have less pressure right there.
Was the transition hard though?
Like the transition is hard because I'm used to feedback. I'm used to instant feedback. You know immediately if you're doing good.
Oh, from the crowd, yeah.
Yes, you know immediately if you're doing bad. And so you do a scene and you're like, well, how was it? And you can't always go and talk to the director, especially when you're a new actor.
Yeah.
You got to just say, stay back. Yeah, this is not your lane. You know? And so I'm asking people, was that okay? Was that good?
So are you at the point where like people are requiring or asking you to come into things, or are you still auditioning for stuff?
I can audition if I want to. I can go in for reads, especially if it's a big part. You know, there's been things that I went out for where there's other big names that were in the running for it, and you need to audition for it. Unless the primary or the director are huge fans and they're like, we just need this person, which has happened.
Yeah.
That's how I got Magic Mike. I didn't audition for Magic Mike. I got a call from Channing. And he's like, dude, big fan. I want you in the movie. And I'm like, okay. You know, what am I going to play? You know, a drug dealing DJ. All right.
He got in touch with you.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it wasn't a casting thing. He was like, you know, I want you
there.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So that was really cool. But there's, you know, from time to time, there's stuff that I might want to go out for. But at this point, I would rather go out and do comedy. It's more fun. Unless it's something big where it's like, okay, it makes sense.
I'm just trying to picture you like in front of a cell phone doing like a self tape.
I've done it. Like, really? I've done it. Yeah.
Gabriel Iglesias. And I wish from California.
I wish the one I wanted, when I was doing that, that we had those the apps, the ones where the text appears on the phone so that it doesn't
teleprompter.
So it doesn't look like you're trying to read something. You know, because when it looks like you're reading, and then you gotta look at the camera.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I've done plenty of those. The self tape, and you're sitting there by yourself.
With the blue screen.
Or you ask somebody to read it.
My daughter's an actress. She does them all the time, and it's just funny because the teleprompter was a thing that kind of makes it so much easier.
And, yeah, and it looks cool. Like, oh, look at that. He knows his lines.
He's like, no, I don't.
All right, I want to get into WWE. You, like me, were from that generation, and you're a huge fan. First, I want to ask you, because I know you're doing now, you're the host of WWE Rivals on A&E.
Yeah, I got a gig.
What would you have wrestled? Like, if you were given the opportunity to, would you have wrestled?
Yes, absolutely, I would have. And I probably still can right now, because I just think that, you know, anytime they get a good celebrity who's an excited fan of the brand, that they want to get them in the ring, just physically, you know, you saw me coming up them stairs. I was celebrating the fact that, wow, these stairs are half the size. This is so much easier to get up here. But it's still, you know, it was still a thing.
What would your nickname be if you were in it?
It would probably still have to be Fluffy.
Fluffy.
Yeah. Would you have used Fluffy back? I mean, come on. Let's go back to the Hulk Hogan era, and you know.
I'm not the British Bulldog. The thing is that I'm not abrasive. I'm not the griton. I'm not the one that's gonna go out there. Let me tell you, that's not me.
Randy Savage.
What would your promo have been like if you had to turn around?
Oh, too soft spoken. Hey man, look, we're gonna go out there and, you know, we're gonna get cookies after. So I wish you all the best, and I'll see you in there. And, you know, I'd have been that one that would just throw people off because I'd be too nice. And they're like, he's so sweet. And then I freaking clothesline him or something.
I mean, but you would have been like a fan favorite because everybody just would have caught everybody off guard. What do you think about Bad Bunny? I mean, he's going all out.
I think that Bad Bunny could legit just stop singing and be a professional wrestler.
Right?
He's that good.
Wow.
And usually, anytime a celebrity's getting the mix, yeah, they're good to talk on the microphone or good to stand there and look scared or maybe swing a chair, but to actually perform and be in the ring, like in the mix, getting thrown around and beat up, that's not easy.
Yeah, that brother's taking chairs and tables.
I was worried for him.
I know.
I take one of those hits. We're not having this conversation right now. Yeah, so I'm not going to – I would love to very much have had the opportunity to wrestle when I physically felt like I could, but – yeah, it hurts to sit down now. I'm not trying to. Yeah, ya me duele todo. I'm that guy.
I do one match, and I know my family would have to take care of me for 3 weeks. But I'd do it just to do it.
And don't get me wrong. Last week, I was at Monday Night Raw in Anaheim at the Honda Center, and I was ringside, and I got recognized by the crowd. And I know that sounds crazy to say that, like, really? By the whole crowd?
Yeah.
I kind of stand out. So the crowd during a match started chanting Fluffy. And the wrestler in the ring, a wrestler named Ivar, is a big Viking dude. He's listening, and he's like, what the hell? Is my match really getting hijacked by somebody chanting? By
wait, is that
chanting?
The one where you were on ringside?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I saw that. That's the one on Instagram.
Yeah,
I think,
so I'm ringside, and the crowd started chanting Fluffy because they saw me there. And so the wrestler looks at me, and he's giving me dirty looks and stuff. And blah, 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 blah. I can't, like, pointing. And
yeah.
He pointed. I stood up, and when I stood up, the whole crowd, and then when I took off the hat, like, it's on. They're like, oh! And I'm like, oh, my God, I might have to fight.
Turn around, take it on.
So that told me right then and there that if I push for it, I think I could get myself in the ring, but I don't want to get hurt. Realistically, I'm not trying to.
Stay on
but I did think that was cool. That the
you
crowd,
were hyping.
The crowd was behind me for sure.
Yeah.
That's
and then
awesome.
That wrestler's hit me up since then. He's like, hey, man, you know.
Did you definitely come in again? Do the promo with him?
What's that?
Like he'll invite you to come and do that again?
Oh, for sure. Easily. It only gives him more attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It helps,
yeah.
You know, that's how you grow people.
Creates a storyline of some sort.
But I'm a huge fan of it, and that wrestling had a lot to do with the ideas of the branding because I see how WWE does their marketing, their branding, all their products have a certain level of consistency and quality. And so that's why when you – I pride myself on all my merch having a certain level of quality. Little detallitos, little details like the stickers, the hologram stickers, or making sure that the tag on the back is screen printed. It's not just some Fruit of the Loom or, you know, a Pro Club. It's actual. It looks nice. Everything looks nice. And there's no expense spared in making sure that you have a really high quality product.
So this year started off really good for you. You actually presented at the Golden Globes. How did that like initially take place?
It was an awesome week. So I was in Orlando taping WWE Rivals, which for me was huge. As big a fan as I am, and I'm sitting there hosting this show with wrestlers, and then I get a phone call, and they're like, hey, they want to know if you'd like to be a presenter this Sunday. For the Golden Globes. I'm like, oh, my God.
Right? That's crazy. Oh.
That's nice.
And so I was very excited about it. I left the set that day and then went straight to the men's warehouse and got fitted. I got fitted for a tux. And
look at his face.
Oh, no, it was good.
I got fitted for this tux.
It was nice. And then I got back here and picked it up. And
you got to read off the teleprompter there, right?
So funny about that is that I'm presenting with George Lopez, and both of us wear glasses. We both these are sunglasses, but they're prescription. And so we're standing there, and we're looking at the teleprompter. Usually teleprompters are about this big, this screen right here. Okay, the teleprompters that they had were the ones that go right on top of the camera, and it's maybe the size of like that the half size iPad.
Like a tablet, yeah, the tablet.
Wow. So it's that big. And so we're both looking at it, and I go, hey, bro, can you read that shit? And I can't see it. And so we're just doing this shit. And then I grab my glass, and he grabbed his, and we both put our glasses on. All right, cool. And then I looked at him, like, hey, you want to do a thing where we're like two old fuckers, and we got to put on our glasses to read the teleprompter? Because that's funny. So that's what we did. So as soon as we walked out there for the actual take, we both kind of squinted. And then we just pulled out our glasses and we put them on. Cabrón, you're right here. You know? So it was so much fun. That was the first time I got to work with George because I hadn't seen him in almost 20 years.
Wow.
And so we did this together, and I thought that was really, really cool that the two of us at this level of our careers can be, you know, in front of millions of people presenting.
How is he like off? Like you've known him for 20 years, but what is he like just as a general person?
I've known him for 20 years, but it's not like we were hanging out for 20 years.
Okay.
You know, I'm very busy. He's very busy. It was just one of those things where, you know,
that life brought you together.
We crossed paths early on when I was a new comic. But then it was just one of those things where we're both just doing our thing.
Just on a separate
and
side.
And we never got into a place where we could do something together, whether it was a stand-up show or a sitcom or movie or anything like that. It was always just, he's over here, I'm over there. And then so I thought it was cool that the Golden Globes brought us together.
Yeah.
You would think you guys are good friends.
You know what? Once we sat down and just started talking and shooting the shit, I'm like, hey, man, what the hell?
Yeah.
And then I told him, I said, hey, congratulations on your show. And he goes, hey, you should be on it.
Yeah.
And I go, yeah, I'm down, dude. And we have the same agent. And our agent was standing right there. And he's like, got it. Next thing I know, I get the script, and I'm on episode one of season two of Lopez versus Lopez. So we got a chance to hang out and talk, and it was great conversations. And it's like we have so much in common, and I just think that, you know, I have a feeling that because of the position he's in, because I know now being in this position, a lot of times people want things from you, and after a while it kind of makes you a little bit like reluctant to engage.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you don't want to feel obligated or you know what I mean? And so I felt like the fact that we're both at a certain spot, he knew this guy doesn't want anything from me. He doesn't need anything from me. You can actually just be yourself and not have to worry because I'm not trying to take anything from him, you know? And so we were just having great conversations. It was cool. Super nice. I was complimenting his shoes, and next thing I know, he buys me a pair of shoes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, they're nice, too. Like, I'm scared. They're still in the box. They're still in the box. Like, my ass, I'm wearing some freaking New Balance with Menudo stains on the side because I was at a party.
We're at the same thing. Oh, my God, Skechers on my side.
He bought me some incredible shoes. Like, they're Gucci's.
Wow.
Yeah, and the box came, like, in, you know, it was wrapped in, like, this leather Like, it was
damn.
Like,
it was very fun.
Hey, I guess we gotta start complimenting people's shoes now. Maybe
I know, right?
No, it was one of the nicest gifts I ever got, and I thought that was very, very nice of him to do that. He didn't have to.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the right. Maybe Golden Globes next year. I'll wear them.
Hey,
no, Oscars. Yeah,
I'd go to anything. Hey, the free food. I'm down. I know where to get a tux now.
All right, I want to talk about cancel culture, big part of the comedic spectrum now. How are you adjusting to that as a comedian?
I think that I gave it way too much importance. I think that I was way too, I'm like, oh my God, this is a real thing. And the more I think about it and the more time I give it, I'm like, I'm going to be fine. I think the only people I need to worry about are new people who don't know who I am or what I'm about.
Yeah.
If I do a show and I have 2,000 people come out to the show, and they're fans of mine, they already know what type of show to expect. They know that I'm not here to get political. I'm not here to tell them who to vote for, what, you know, what shot to take, what baby to get rid of. I'm not, that's not
yeah,
my...
Yeah, you say you don't talk that, about religion.
I'm not getting into the politics or anything that's controversial. So you know that it's a good time. So I feel like if I was to accidentally say something that might rub someone the wrong way, then... You know, it's understood that, oh, maybe he doesn't know.
He didn't came from that place.
Or it's not coming from a bad place. Yeah. Like, I tell this story about how I did a podcast, and I feel like the girl was trying to bait me. And I feel like clickbait is more of a thing than cancel culture, because everybody just wants the views.
They want to get that one piece.
What gets more clicks than anything is controversy. What, you know, some negative gets more attention than positive. And so this girl baited me by saying, Gabriel, what do you identify as? And I'm like, okay. And I knew exactly where this was going, coming. You know. And I'm like, so I'm playing dumb. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm 47. Hungry, I guess. Thursday, depressed on the weekends.
Like Mexican?
And she's like, no. Are you a they or a them? I go, they or them? And I was like, well, how fat am I? You know, when did I stop being an it? But, you know, I guess I ate myself into a plural. And it's just one of those things where. So I don't try to engage and I don't try to entertain things that I don't have all the information about. And I think that nowadays, whenever you make a joke, people can take it however they want. And ultimately, if you're going to get canceled, first of all, what exactly is canceling? Your job is getting taken away. Are you not able to promote yourself a certain way? Like, I used to worry and now I'm like, why am I sweating this? You know, I've done jokes in the, if you go back into my catalog of material, you can easily find 10 bits that by today's standards, I could be canceled for.
Yeah,
correct.
And so, the fact that you're able to go back in time and pull stuff up and go, ha ha, and then go, oh, well, he said this in 2001, and that's it. Like, you know.
Yeah, and you're a big fan of Eddie
Murphy.
Eddie Murphy was just at a whole other level. So, I mean, if we're going to go back to all those standards.
But then it's like, are we losing the art of truth telling, you know, and storytelling, and, you know, comedians, you know, you have a sense of observing. That's your art. And seeing what life goes around you and how you project that and how you tell your, how you relate to it.
Exactly. But I also think that cancel culture is inconsistent because, they get mad, they attack, and they come at you. But all you got to do is say you're sorry and you're good again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like all you need is a good apology and okay, he'll never do it again. Like,
but have you noticed too that now when you do something, the spotlight is on you, and then as soon as everybody gets over it, they move on to the next person, the spotlight is on them, and then it's like literally you forget what the last person did. That's how it works. Like,
yeah,
it's not really cancel culture because eventually
they get over it. They're on to the next one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They're on to the next one. Yes. And so it's like, all right. So for me, I know that there's, you know, I'm older now, and I'm not going to use that as a cop-out, but I just feel like I don't worry about as much as I used to.
Yeah.
I'm just focused more on stuff that's really affecting me. And I haven't really found myself getting put in a situation that was like, so, oh, my God, that's it. You know, we need to get the publicist and everybody together for damage control. But if it does happen, and you know.
They tried, though. Space Jam 2.
Yeah, the whole Speedy Gonzalez thing.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Who
that
got
was
mad,
dumb.
Really? Like, it was it Latinos?
A bunch of people. Nah, you know who it is. It's some people on Twitter, man.
and that's it.
People on Twitter.
Can
X,
we hear
whatever?
A clip of your voice? That's
oh, the voice? Because people, yeah, they're like, and it was funny, too, because when I did the, when I went to go in, they didn't know I could do the voice, first of all, which I found interesting. What they did know was that I had a certain level of popularity and that I had done voiceover work, and the social media numbers were a certain thing. So if you have strong social media, that's the first thing they look at. And then where's your talent level at? Because they could have gotten 10 other people to do the voice, but maybe they're not as, you know, popular, or they're not as brown. And so the fact that they were able to get an actual Mexican, somebody with strong social media numbers and somebody with the popularity to walk in there, they were surprised that it actually came out of me. And so they're like, first of all, they said, Gabriel, can you just be yourself? And I go, what do you mean be yourself? They go, well, we're thinking about changing the voice and maybe making it a little bit more, you know, bring it up to speed and just what he would sound like now. And we like your voice. And I said, but if you just use my voice, I go, that's not really Speedy Gonzalez.
Yeah.
I can talk fast, but that's not him. I go, you're taking away from it. And they're like, you don't think it's like some people are going to question it?
That was the argument. Is it kind of racist? Yeah, too stereotypical, whatever.
And I'm like, but that's the voice. That's the character. I go, I think the messed up part was having other than Mexicans voice it.
Yeah.
Most of the people were from Europe. There were Europeans doing the voice and other people that were non-Mexican. And so I was like, all right. So I was the first one. So when I went in there, and they're like, okay, you guys want to hear it? They're like, let's do it. So then, of course, you know, Órale, amigos. Hey, me Speedy Gonzalez. De Fosse, no, Mexico. Arriba! Hey, pándale. You know, they're like, they're freaking out. They're like,
bro, that's really funny.
Yeah. They were just losing it. They're like, I can't. Yeah, he did it. I'm like, you guys know that I do voices for a living, right? Like, that's all I do. It's just, it's characters and stuff. So, yeah, doing a Mexican, you know, is pretty easy. It's pretty easy. And then I said, I just found it ironic that they got the slowest Mexican to play the fastest.
Yeah. He's coming up. He's turning around. He's trying to get to the end of the block. Speedy's already there. Fluffy's still walking, trying to get to that spot.
Yeah, right. But no, I was excited to do it. I thought it was cool. I didn't get to meet LeBron or any of the other actors in the movie. Well, with voiceover work,
it's a lot different.
You walk into a studio, you record your thing, and then they call it a day.
So they didn't do that even for, or did like the premiere for that happened during COVID or something? Like you guys didn't get to get together for that premiere?
I was on the road working during the premiere, I didn't get a chance to be there for, you know, any of it. But I thought it was cool that a lot of people knew that even though it was a small character, no pun intended, that it was voiced by me because I made it a big thing.
Talked
about it in the special too. That hey, I got to voice
I was
it.
A big fighter for that. They were sitting there trying to go out. I'm like, no. Nah. I'm like, why are you even arguing this? Like, this is the perfect man for that spot. Like, there's nobody else who can make that job or that character come to life the way you did. So it was,
what's funny is a couple years earlier, there had been conversations about potentially doing a Speedy Gonzalez movie. And I feel like maybe I was conditioned to think that, maybe people might not like that. Because all I kept hearing is the negative
side of it.
And I didn't really have my own true opinion of how I felt about the – I was just taught, hey, this is bad. Because at one point they pulled a cartoon off of Cartoon Network and they wouldn't show Speedy Gonzalez for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, they did the same thing with Pepe Le Pew. I mean, there is just
– yeah,
they're going after all of them. I mean, I think Paw Patrol was attacked at one point. Like, it's just insane how many different cartoons are being turned around and taken out because of whatever connotations of somebody are. There's people who are creating Latino-like type shows who are being attacked by their own Latinos because of, oh, this is too stereotypical or this is – I'm like, this is this person's life. Like, this is what they experienced. In the summer of whatever year she made this, like, why are we making it seem like it didn't exist just because it didn't fall?
But it's one of those, they only hold certain things accountable. Like,
yeah,
one of my favorite shows ever that I still love watching is Family Guy. And Family Guy gets away with murder every night. You know?
They're running All in the Family.
They're still, yeah. So I'm like, come on, just really?
Family Guy's, what is it, South Park, all these shows.
All good.
What about The Simpsons? Was that kind of
Simpsons?
Yeah. I think was
that was a little mellow.
Simpsons is maybe 80% of what Family Guy is, as far as like the level of like going there.
But Simpsons didn't take those shots. That I think Simpsons stuck with their own storyline, whereas like Family Guy takes shots. Like,
yeah,
they straight up take shots at society, and so does and so that's yeah. I want to talk about your current tour. But before we even get it there, Valentine's Day, everybody who knew about this interview said the same thing. They went to your Valentine's Day show, and they had a blast. But apparently you had a blast, too. Can you tell me? Because I know that our team talked to you that morning, and you were telling us, like, we can't do this right now. I'm going to have to turn around and talk about this some other time. But what was that Valentine's show like for you? Because Pepe Aguilar was there. Like, how was that night?
First of all, anybody who came to my show at the Kia Forum, they got not only their money's worth, but probably 10 times that. Because, you know, you want to find something to do on that special day, and a lot of couples were in the crowd. And we had 13,000 people in the building for a Valentine's Day show. I had my guy Martin hosting. I had a couple special guests that popped in, one of them being Joe Coy, who had shows that weekend as well.
Yeah. Cool.
And we're friends, so he came by and did some time. I had the stage decorated with – it was very much a one-off show. So it was a giant heart on the stage screen and balloons. And when people walked in, it was decorated all real, real nice so people could have photo ops. And I wanted people to have moments where they could take pictures. So I had cool velvet couches, red, where you could sit and take pictures and stuff. But the show itself was just an awesome lineup of talent. And then my manager told me, hey, Pepe Aguilar and his wife are here. I go, what? He goes, yeah, they're here to see the show. I go, you're shitting me. He goes, yeah, they're here. And they came down to the dress room, said hi. I'm like, oh, my God. And I go, yeah. I go, hey, dude. I go, when are we going to do something? And he goes, pues cuando quieras, mano, cuando tú quieras.
So wait, he wasn't booked for the show?
No, he wasn't booked. He was
so
there.
So everybody bought tickets. They had no idea.
I didn't even know he was going to be there. That wasn't something I planned.
That is so cool.
That's why I think that that night was so magical for so many reasons. And I'll get to that one part that you're desperately. See, we focus on the negative. You're not focusing on this earlier stuff.
I don't consider it a negative. I'm just saying.
You went for the part that, like, oh, this is what everybody.
Everybody was telling me.
And I'll get to it. I won't shy away from it. I know who I am. So the fact that Pepe and his wife are backstage, and I go, hey, dude. I go, when are we going to do something? He goes, cuando quieras, whenever you want. And I go, what about tonight? He goes, well, he goes, mano, he goes, I can do like a cappella, pero no tengo mis, you know, I don't have mis músicos, the mariachi. And I go, well, it just so happens. Because I hired a mariachi to open up the show and play music while people were coming into the
forum. So cool.
Oh, my goodness.
I said, well, I got mariachis next door. And he goes, really? I go, yeah. So I took them, you know, took him over there, introducing the mariachi. And I said, you think you can do a song? And so he's in there and he's doing it was cool to watch. He's doing like a sound check, basically, to see if he's compatible with these guys.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So he looks at one of them. He goes, okay, key of C. I don't know what that means. I'm not musically, but he looked at him and goes, key of C, and the mariachi just starts playing something, and then he just starts, la, 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 and he's going along with the way he's playing, and then he goes, okay, change it to this, and the guy changes it, and he goes, hum, ha, ha, ha. He's just doing whatever, and he's checking to see if he's, like, if they're able to get it, and he goes, okay, we got it, just like that, and I'm like, I go, I just watched something awesome, and magical. I don't even know what I just saw. And so he goes, okay, we're gonna do this song, and we're gonna do this song, and we're gonna do this song, and we're gonna do this song.
Oh, wow.
I was like, ¿qué cabrón? I just said one. Se pasó.
He took the whole show.
So he did four songs.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, are you kidding me? And I'm looking around at my friends, like, well, Pepe Aguilar's on my show. He's gonna do four songs. So we're trying to set it up. And I'm like, okay, let me quarterback this thing. How do we get him up on stage? And so what wound up happening is during my set, I said, let me make sure that I do at least an hour. Once I have an hour of time under my belt, the fans got their show. They got an hour-long show, and now we can play. So when I hit the hour mark, Pepe just walked out on stage, and then he got recognized, and then the crowd went crazy. And then we're going back and forth, and we're like, hey, Pepe, it's Valentine's Day. Do you think maybe you could sing a song? And then, of course, he's like, well, I'd love to, but I don't have a mariachi with me. And I'm like, well, it just so happened. I have a mariachi. And when I pointed, the mariachi walked out on stage and the crowd
went
crazy.
That is epic, man.
So then he proceeds to sing four songs. And he's talking in between songs. And he's paying me huge compliments during the show. And I'm like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I'm not asking him to do that. I just think it's awesome that he's there. But the fact that he's talking nice about me, I mean, it just got that much better. So as soon as he hits the stage, I had a buddy of mine back behind the curtain. Hand me a bottle of tequila because I wanted to do a shot on stage with Pepe. So we pour the shots and toast and cheers and did the drink. And for me, I thought there is no way this audience is going to want more after all these hours of comedy. And then you end it with Pepe Aguilar singing four hits and the crowd's just singing along. I go, there's no way the show continues. That's it. Ya se acabó. So while Pepe was singing, I freaking killed the bottle. I literally, in four songs, I was pouring.
There is no way you can't drink to listening to Pepe Aguilar.
Yes,
he has the ultimate breakup songs, like love songs. Like.
And I'm not in the front row. I am on the stage. I'm on the stage recording him and drinking. And I'm dancing. And I'm just like, oh, my God, this is the greatest night ever. And so I am pisteando. I literally killed a bottle by myself on that stage in front of all those people. So then I figured, you know what? I just need to keep it together so that at the end of his last song, I walk up, grab the mic. Ladies and gentlemen, that's our show. Happy Valentine's Day. Get home safe. Yeah. Buenas noches. Good night. When I went up there at the end to say thank you, good night, you can feel when the audience is like satisfied. And you can also feel when they're like, wait, traditionally, my shows are 90 minutes, sometimes 2 hours.
Yeah.
Just me performing. So the fact that I only did an hour, I felt like the crowd was, okay. Nobody was standing. Nobody was applauding. They're just like.
They're waiting for more.
Like, that's like when the artists do those shows and they go, thank you, good night. And then they walk away and then, otra. That's what was happening.
Oh, shoot.
And I'm like, are you guys waiting for more? And I'm like, but I'm already buzzing. You guys care? So I'm like, oh, holy shit, I'm stuck. I was literally drunk after about 30 minutes. And I want to say that I still did about an hour to an hour and a half more.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
My gosh.
And that was sheer instinct. But at a certain point during my show, I kept drinking because we did have more, and I asked the crowd, you guys mind if I keep drinking? All right. I remember that part, and I guess on the last shot I drank it and it hit bad.
Is it that way?
I've never gotten sick on stage before. And so I did one shot and I'm like, I felt it. You got the water in the back of your throat, your eyes. You get that, you swallow and you're like, oh my God. And I knew, I'm like, I am about to throw up right now in front of all these people. And so I just looked at everyone and I did this. I put my finger up like that.
Turned around.
I turned around and freaking, vámonos!
Oh my God.
It wasn't like just in a cup. No, just boom!
Hey, I'm surprised there's no video surfacing social
there
media.
Is. Oh, so, there is.
I didn't see
when
that.
When I lost my cookies, I kept talking into the microphone as my back is turned to the audience, and I said, "Don't nobody post that. Don't nobody post that, please. Let's just keep it cool." And then I'm like, "But I'm gonna keep going." And I turned around, and I still performed.
You still finished.
I still want to finish.
Wow,
the show.
That's your professionalism.
And I had my couple of little stains here, but it was rough, man. It was rough. I would not, because then of course people reach out and they're like, poor guy, he's dealing with something. Oh my God, he's gonna kill himself.
That's not what we got.
All the negative comments that I was reading was like, oh man, what's going on? And I'm like, you guys weren't there. You don't know what happened.
Yeah, everybody.
I would not have done that had I had known that I was gonna continue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I thought that I just gotta keep it together long enough to say thank you, good night, and then we go in the back and put a party.
But that's what you're really well known for. You have a very loyal base fan that they really take care of you. They really do.
So nothing was said on my social media. It was all stuff that I caught after the fact, like on TikTok and,
I wouldn't have known. It was just our audience was like, had a blast.
Yeah.
Like, they had a blast. And they had just told me what the night was like, because I wasn't there. I don't have a couple. I wish. But they went, they had a blast, and they had mentioned what was taking up. I was like, man, I'm going to ask them to see if that's something. But, hey, for more power to you, because that performance and that whole show had to be something that was outrageously amazing. Because, I mean, to even be able to continue after that is insane.
And I'm not going to say that it was the level that it should have been. Clearly, you te pones pedo and you're like, you get sloppy, but and you're funny for a little while, and then you're just like, wow, this is really happening.
He's storytelling at this point.
This is really happening. Wow.
That's actually funny.
Do you still get nervous? Like when you, after all these years, do you still get excited? You know your fans, but do you still like, wow, I'm doing this. This is what I love to do. Does it make your day when you get on stage?
When I'm in front of an audience that's there to see me, I am not nervous. I'm excited to do the show, but there's no nerves. There's no feeling of uncertainty. You're like, oh, I hope this goes okay. I don't get that feeling. The only time I get that butterfly or nervous or scared is whenever I'm in an environment that's not mine and I'm expected to do something in front of people who may or may not know what I'm about.
Yeah.
Okay. So like, for example, doing the Golden Globes, even though I'm not doing stand-up, this is an environment that I'm not familiar with. And I'm there working with George, and all we got to do is read a little teleprompter for 3-4 lines. That made me more nervous than performing, let's say, at Dodger Stadium or performing at the Forum, because it's unfamiliar territory. Whereas Dodger Stadium, it's like people say, oh, you weren't nervous? No, I wasn't, because all those people are there because they're already invested in you. You know, they want to see you do well. Mm-hmm. There's that many people there to encourage and push you and let you know we're here for you. It's not like I have to win them over. The fact that they're there, they're part of it.
Yeah.
Whereas when I'm doing, let's say, a late night talk show and they say, you got 4 minutes to do your set and then you'll maybe get 2 minutes on the couch, maybe three, depending on the time situation. So then you got to be concerned with your performance and making sure you hit the 4 minutes and not go over that. Because if you go over that, then you don't get couch time. You don't get to promote your product or whatever you're doing. So that makes you nervous because then people start applauding and you're like, don't applaud again. So stuff like that. Or if I'm doing a film or television project and I'm like a guest and I don't know the environment, then that makes me nervous when I'm doing something that I'm not familiar with. Okay. That I'm like, oh, okay, let's see. All right, here we go. But stand up, it's second nature. So I'm very much. I'm more comfortable on stage than I am anywhere else.
Definitely.
Nice. Okay, so I'm a big dog lover, and I don't know if you've seen social media's memes about how every Latino household has a crusty white dog, a poodle, and a chihuahua, and I've experienced both. I've had both in my house. Let's talk about your two dogs, Vinny and Risa.
Uh-huh.
Tell us about them.
Funny thing, I almost brought them. I take him everywhere. I do. I take him everywhere. My little boy dog, Vinny, he is 13, and Risa is 16. She'll be 17 in December. I've had them both since they were puppies. And, I've always had dogs. I've had dogs since I was 10, and they've always been Chihuahuas. I've had a few Chihuahuas in my life. And these two are just, they definitely are spoiled, but... When I say spoiled, people are like, oh, you buy them all kinds of stuff. No, I mean, they're spoiled with my time. They go with me everywhere. They've been to 35-plus states. They're always on planes, tour buses, hotels. I own 4 strollers.
Wow. Okay. They've traveled more babies. Than me.
I don't have babies. I own 4 strollers, and I don't have any babies.
Is it true that you threw a quinceañera for one of your chihuahuas?
A quinceañera is an understatement. That was an epic ass party. That was okay. So I saw a guy in Mexico on TikTok who threw a quinceañera for his dog, and it was a chihuahua. And I'm like, oh my god, there's no way that guy loves his dog more than I love my dog. And right after Dodger Stadium, I wanted to do a party to celebrate doing Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
And so I figured I'd make the party about my dog instead of me. And this way I feel like I would enjoy it more.
That's cute.
So I made a sick-ass quinceañera. And I told everybody, please don't record me or take pictures of me. Well, let's make this about my dog. Mm-hmm. And everyone who I invited were people that I knew. So I wasn't robbing people of a fan experience. It was more so like, come on, let me try to be, semi-off the grid for the night.
Yes.
And one person recorded me pushing my dog in a stroller, and the stroller was lit, got lights on it. So it went viral, and next thing I know, I'm doing interviews on all these television shows about this quinceañera. It did.
How many people went to this quinceañera?
Over 400.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That is insane. I know it went viral on the bilingual pets council.
It was awesome.
Everybody loved it. It was insane though. I mean, what a party though.
It was.
Was there choreography for like?
Yes, there was.
Yeah, really.
We had dancers, and then we had animal acts. So like, there was this guy from Las Vegas
who shook.
He does shows with his chihuahuas during halftime performance, halftime shows at basketball games, and so he'll do like tricks where. He's like a Cirque du Soleil muscle guy where he can hold himself up with one hand, and then he'll hold a chihuahua with the other hand and then have his legs doing splits.
Oh, my gosh.
Or he'll put two dogs on him and he'll do circles and he'll fall on bricks. I mean, it's like really, really cool. And the dogs are like running on basketballs. So it's a really, really cool show. So
was there other dogs invited to this party?
There was other dogs there, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so it was like a dog party.
It wasn't a dog party, but some people did bring their dogs.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's adorable.
And there was no dog food. They were straight up eating like legit.
I got
like,
two dogs. I wasn't invited.
That's what the thing. Chihuahuas eat human food and live. Mine lived up for 16 years. So. Yeah. And he ate everything.
I get people telling me all the time, you need to feed your dog this and feed your dog that. I go, my dog eats what I eat. And they're like, well, that's not good. I said, well, my dog's 16, so whatever.
Something is going on, right?
Whatever.
I think we're going to be ready for a game. Are you ready for a game, Fluffy?
Are we going to play a game?
Yeah.
Okay. But come to on. Your point, though, yes, my dogs, I love my dogs. And that's another thing people know me for is having the chihuahuas.
I thought you were going to bring them. I thought you were going
to. You should have. You should have.
I could have. They got a nanny. They got a nanny.
See, they even got a nanny. They travel. They have four strollers. Like, better life than me. All right.
So I know that you're, you know, it's what you say you're known for. We got the stage voices. I'm a huge fan of that. I actually attended one of your events when you had come to Newark. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to have a game. It's called Stage Voices with Fluffy. I'm going to give you a voice, and then you turn around and try to duplicate it. These are ones that you've already done.
Oh, shoot.
But we'll try to see if we can do, like, a scenario version of them for some of this. So, obviously, you already did Speedy Gonzalez, but we want to try to see what would Speedy Gonzalez be like if he was ordering tacos.
Hola, amigo. Can I please have two tacos con carne asada and cilantro?
The drive-thru cable, only because I want to hear the drive-thru guy.
What do you mean?
Every time you go to the drive-thru.
Oh, but I thought you said Speedy Gonzalez.
No, I know that one. You already did
one. Okay.
You're good.
Yeah, we're going with the next one. It's a bad one. So, drive-thru guy.
What restaurant?
Let's say McDonald's.
Say McDonald's. Will you be using your mobile app or will you be ordering from the menu?
I'll be ordering from the menu.
All right, go ahead.
Can I get a McDouble?
All right, what else?
Can I also get a filet of fish?
Okay, cool. What else?
Can I have a shake?
What kind?
Chocolate?
We ain't got no chocolate.
Vanilla?
We ain't got no vanilla.
What flavor do you have?
Actually, the machine broke. Machine broke as hell.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to do a Diet Coke.
Okay, pull up.
And you're completely accurate because I've yet to get a milkshake that was actually worth a shit.
Yeah, the machine's always broken.
Yeah, always.
All right, redneck cable guy.
I tell you right now, the problem is your coaxial cable here. It's one size and the wall unit is completely different. They usually just go on the internet and watch videos. They're better off.
All right, club girls ordering their coffee.
Can I have a chai, iced tea, latte, mixed with soy and vanilla bean? Okay.
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 Okay, then. What else you need? That guy works everywhere.
He works in the coffee shop as well. That's funny.
Speaking about coffee, I saw your coffee order. And you are one of the girls, the club girls, ordering their coffee. This is his coffee order. Let me know if it's right. Trenta iced coffee with extra heavy cream and 12 Splendas.
Yup.
Yup. 12 Splendas.
I know. Talk about that. And let me just tell you right now, because people tell me all the time, I go, you realize that's a lot of Splenda. Believe it or not, 12 Splenda is, for the size, it's slightly excessive. Slightly. But I've heard where people... A friend of mine, she used to put 22 Splenda in her iced tea. That's the same size. 22.
Oh, 22. That's insane.
They are kind of small, so I guess it's,
my goal is to try to turn my coffee into horchata. Okay. That's why I asked for the extra heavy cream. Because Starbucks doesn't have horchata.
Yeah. I mean, they'll get there eventually. They're going to have to.
Eventually. That's why I like to go to this place called Tierra Mia.
I love Tierra Mia.
Ooh. Excuse me. Tierra Mia has really like Latino inspired beverages. So it's like they'll do something like an horchata frappe, which didn't exist, but you combine the two worlds and you're like, oh my God, it's a frappuccino and it tastes like horchata. And so that's pretty cool. But like with me, you know, just I like having my coffee. I like the experience of going through the drive thru because people tell me all the time, you know, there's better coffee than Starbucks. I'm like, yeah, but I travel. I go, I like consistent. I like knowing that no matter where I go, I'm going to get the same experience. Yeah. And that's what I aim for more than anything else is my experience going to be consistent?
No.
So if I go to Starbucks here or Starbucks in Newark or Starbucks in London, I know that if I order this a certain way,
unless you're in a bad mood and you don't make it with love, then.
Yeah. Oh, sometimes I'll order it, right? And then it looks like one of those Neapolitans where it'll be like all the coffee's up here and then you see cream here and you see the eye. It looks weird because they haven't mixed it yet. Mm-hmm. And so when they hand it to me, I'm like, what is that? Well, this is what you ordered. You better shake it. Do that shit right there.
All right. So we got one.
Yeah, that's my go-to right there. Is nice. Trenta iced coffee, 12 Splenda, and extra heavy cream.
Your tour now. Don't worry, be fluffy.
Don't worry, be fluffy.
I love that. First of all, where'd you come up with the name?
The idea for it was I wanted a 90s theme tour because I wanted to have like 90s theme video content, graphics. I wanted the music, all the music that we play that night. So when people are coming in, it's only 90s music. It's nice. I wanted to cater to my you know, my youth, my childhood, and the 90s. That was it right there. And so I wanted to have this vibe. The Don't Worry, Be Fluffy. We're trying to come up with a name, and I want to say that it was my tour manager, Edro, who actually came up with that one because I was like, I like the song Don't Worry, Be Fluffy, or no, Don't Worry, Be Happy. Sorry. And so that's I think he was the one that came up with actually that one right there, Don't Worry, Be Fluffy.
So what are some of the future dates that people can go and actually?
Well, it depends on, I mean, shoot, we're all over, man. I got dates from here until 26.
Damn.
Yeah, most of the stuff is not out yet, but I mean, we've already, you know, we're already building the next time we come back.
Oh, wow.
You know, we're that far ahead where it's like it's already, you know, full circle.
Oh, it just goes like full circle. You end up.
Any tour is basically, it's the same tour and all they do is change the mask of it.
Yeah.
And then the name. Because once you go in the full circle, you come back, you want to change it up.
Is this tour including the MetLife Stadium?
That's not confirmed nor denied yet.
Mm.
Editing.
Cannot confirm nor deny that. And that's what happens when you get drunk on stage and people start asking you about retirement. And I'm like, because I know you got that off TikTok.
Hey. Well, Jimmy Kimmel is retiring in 2 years from the night show.
Diske.
Diske.
He said, I can't deny or accept
Would
that.
You see yourself doing that?
A late night show?
Yeah.
Too much work.
Late night show with Fluffy?
It's too much work. Let me tell you, I respect and appreciate people that can get up and do the grind of having to, because people think, oh, it's just a show. Your name's on it. You go out there. They only see you for the 30 minutes or the hour, and they think that that's it. They don't realize that is so much work, the amount of preparation throughout the day, the sleepless nights dealing, you know, back and forth with writers and talking to your producers and figuring out segments. They don't see that. It is a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of things I'm like, it sounds cool. And, you know, it sounds cool to do, but it's so much. And I'm not trying to do that. That's why I love my stand-up comedy life. I go on the road. I sleep well. And then I do my shows and I feed my chihuahuas and I drink my coffees. Even a podcast, you know, people have asked me, how come you don't do a podcast? I go, because I don't want to just do a one and done. Like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. But I also know that if I do it right, there's a lot of things that
put into it.
You know, and if you're going to do it well, you want to make sure that you're doing it in a professional setting, in a good studio. You want good sound, good lighting, good people, well-informed people. The fact that you all have laptops and you're not just out here winging it. So what else? You know, you have actually taken the time to do research.
Thank you.
And study and prepare yourself to articulate and ask good questions to get the best out of your guest or each other. And that's not something you just wing. And I don't want to half-ass anything.
Yeah.
I don't want people to go, well, it was cool in the beginning, and then you know.
Yeah, a lot of people don't get that. It took a really long time for us to get to even this caliber, like 3 years before we switched names. We did everything. It was just
And you got to get into a rhythm with each other so that you all work together.
In sync.
Yeah. Because if one of you's off, it just throws the whole thing off. And so, I don't envy people that have these late night shows. And would it be nice to have a show with my name on it? Of course it would. But I also know the work that goes into it.
It takes behind it, yeah.
Yeah, that's why when people say, oh, man, don't you want to be where Kevin Hart's at? No.
No.
No, I don't. I don't envy that because I know how hard he works. I seriously believe that there's 3 Kevin Harts out there. There has to be. He works way too much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every time I turn around, he's got two movies, he's doing comedy tours, he's producing two, three different podcasts.
Some people like that lifestyle, but like you said, you like your balanced lifestyle.
I love naps, and I love being able to get in my car and just go, just being able to have the freedom to, I'm gonna go to the mall. I'm gonna go get something to eat. Just being able to drop everything to go do that, it's its own
privilege.
Yes, because if you're working all the time and you're like, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna go take a quick drive and you can't do that. We gotta do it. People waiting for you. You become a hostage to what it is that you're doing, and you've already committed to it. And I don't want to be known as a flake, so I'd rather not even engage with it. So I don't have to fail. I'd rather just be like, know my limitations, know what I want to do and what I don't want to do, and be happy with it.
That's very cool.
So when I get people telling me, you should do more. Like, motherfucker.
I mean, shit, you do enough.
What do you want? This is the first month I've actually taken off in my career in 27 years.
Wow.
The month of July and then the beginning of February. I was supposed to be in Texas the beginning of January, and I told my manager, I said, hey, let me just take January off. He goes, you sure? You okay? I go, yeah. Let me just take it off. And don't get me wrong, I've been forced to stay home in the past for either medical reasons or COVID or stuff like that. But to feel okay and just say, you know what? And not even because I was in a bad place, but I'm just like, let me just take the month off. And
you're entitled to PTO, like, Fluffy. Yeah. You're entitled to PTO.
So I did, and I found myself working more. So now I'm flying to Orlando to go tape the WWE thing. I was doing the Golden Globes. We're working on promos and doing all kinds of press. So
at least you're doing the stuff that you love. Like,
exactly.
The stuff that you love. It's not stuff that's like an obligation to do on an everyday. Mm-hmm. So really
but
cool.
It was nice to know that, like, and when they were asking me, hey, man, are you okay with going to Glendale on a Sunday? I'm like, there's no traffic. I'm down. Because I come to LA so much. Yeah. I set the GPS, and I know where I'm going, but I always set the GPS so I can have an idea of how long it's going to take. And it's no less than an hour and a half. It's between an hour and a half to an hour and 50 minutes to get home on an average day.
Yeah.
And, like, I think I got here in 30 minutes.
That's nice. The good thing about recording Sundays. The traffic is
non-existent. Yeah. I was just like, look at this.
He's got to get here on time. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I really enjoyed that you came to the studio. It's a real honor in my case.
I thought we were playing the game. What happened?
We played the game. It was you taking noises.
You didn't really good.
Unless you want to play another
voices.
Game.
Hey, you want to keep making voices. That's up to you.
Or any other question. But I know I get long-winded sometimes with some of the answers. But you got me here.
If you want one more question, the only question I have.
But this one is special. The special for though?
I think, for me, it's comedians. Because you're a huge fan of even other comics. Like, what would you say is some advice that you could give somebody who's just kind of getting their foot in the door in that area as a comic?
As a comic, it's funny because I used to give advice all the time. Anybody that wanted it, or even if they didn't want it, I figured, you know what, I feel like one of those guys, I'll tell you a thing or two about this business. The advice that I would give, unfortunately, doesn't apply to today's comics. It doesn't apply to the way things are done now, because I feel like new comics that have been doing it for like 2 years or less, new comics have a certain level of expectation. They think that everything is supposed to happen now. And unfortunately, that's not.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have 20-year careers.
I'm like, not it's from just... that. And so any advice that I would give is not for somebody who wants it now. It's for somebody who wants the long play.
The long play.
The long game. And is willing to struggle and actually sacrifice and fall on their face, because I do believe that you need to struggle and fall on your face in order to get somewhere. And people say, you don't have to struggle if you don't have to, you know, you don't need to do that if you don't have to. I think you do, because when you struggle and you fall on your face, once you get to where you're at, and even if there is a shortcut to get there, you will respect where you're at more if it's a fight to get there. You will cherish it. You will embrace it. You will really value it. Whereas if it came too easy, I think that you're going to be reckless.
Yeah. Yeah, because the minute you hit adversity, you don't know how to handle it.
You don't know how to handle it. Exactly. Yeah. And so when I think about comics now, I always ask the question. I say, all right, well, why do you want to get into comedy? Do you want to do it as a hobby, or do you want to do it for business? And they're like, well, I like doing it as a hobby, but I would like to make money doing it. I go, then okay. Now, if you're gonna treat it as a business, then you need to start having certain practices, ask certain questions, get ready for the branding and the lessons, and learn to go home. Learn to not hang out with certain people. Learn to surround yourself with people that maybe you don't have the most fun with, but that you can learn from. Hang out with people that know more than you. You know, you're not going to learn nothing from pendejos other than, oh man, I should probably hang out.
I say that all the time, bro. Surround yourself with the people who are going to elevate you. But not cheerlead you, like elevate you, you know, like.
And avoid people who guilt you for succeeding.
There you go.
People that make you feel like shit because you're doing well. And I noticed that in the beginning, when you're struggling, everybody wants to be your friend, because everybody, misery loves company.
Yeah.
Yes. And, oh, you're struggling too. I'm struggling too. But the second you start getting out of that circle of, and you start getting better, you start finding out who around you is really in your corner.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there was a lot of guilt coming up on this, and I felt like, why am I feeling bad? I'm doing well, but I feel bad. And then they're like, oh, you're bragging. No, I'm not bragging. I'm just letting you know that, man, you know, we're talking.
Yeah, you're celebrating.
Telling me about how your day is. Right. I'm telling you about how my day is. Clearly, they're different days, but it's like, what am I supposed to say? Oh, man, that sucks about your thing and that, but, you know, my day's, it's okay. So now you got to feel bad that you can't celebrate yourself. So then it's like, oh, my God. And then it's like, okay. Yeah, and so that's very draining.
Yeah.
And then it slows your progress down, because then you're afraid to succeed because you don't want to make people feel bad. At least I do. I hate making people feel bad. And I'd rather feel bad with them than celebrate over them or celebrate, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And it almost feels like I got to be sneaky. Like, oh man, that sucks with the kids and everything. That's terrible. And then get in the car. Oh, I got your head.
You honestly crazy. Couldn't have said it any better. I 100% agree.
It's hard, you know, and I have some friends that are dealing with their own situations where I'm like, life is, you know, life is going well for them, but they can't enjoy celebrate it because then other people are like, oh, well, look at you.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it must be nice. Yeah. It must be nice. It must be, I'm like, really?
Like, join the bandwagon, bro.
Yeah. So it's hard, but back to the whole giving advice as far as to new talent, the term comedian, when I was growing up, you heard comedian, you were either a stand-up comic or comedian like on television or film. Now, comedian could be a YouTuber, TikToker, influencer, you know, there's all these different, a Broadway show comic or a television show comic or stand-up comic or, you know,
a virtual.
and the more time goes by, the technology growing, there's going to be more different, you know, things. Time. You know, some people say, oh, I create memes. I'm a comedian. I create memes. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Really? But they're right. I laughed at that. So I guess that falls into the category of it. So we don't know where it's going. But my advice is 1997 advice. It's not 2024 advice. So I can't really, you know, like, hey, you should do this. And now somebody's saying, oh, a tag or a line or, you know, but even then, depending on the audience, people are going to see things differently.
Yeah.
Not to say that I can't perform in front of, you know, 10-year-olds or 12-year-olds or 15-year-olds, because I still have that fan base that comes out to see the shows, but it's not the majority. So I'd be full of it if I said that I could give the best advice to the new up-and-coming guys, because it's a different time.
That makes sense.
And I don't want to sound like, oh, I know it all, because it's just because you're older doesn't mean you know it all. You have to understand that things change, and either you were able to change with everything, or you're not.
You're not. Yeah.
And I feel like I'm in that in the middle right there. Because I still want to hold on to my, you know, I'm still a little bit, no,
that whole OG.
Your waist.
Oh, yeah, OG, no. You know, but then it's like, all right.
I was like, yeah. All right, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show, man. This was a true honor. And I can pretty much, I mean, our audience was really expecting this. They were waiting for this. So if this is kind of a stupid question, if anybody wanted to follow you or, you know, go on the schedule, like, where would they go?
Oh, so this is part of that whole branding thing. My friend Jim Whidbey from El Paso, Texas, back in the day taught me about algorithms and leaving your online footprint.
Yes.
And so he's like, your nickname is Fluffy. He goes, you need to really make that your thing. He goes, you need to incorporate that into as much as, you know, you possibly can. And so we started doing that with the, you know, with the websites and the back. Everything had Fluffy in it. And we did that early on to where even now when you type Fluffy on any search engine, I'm the first
thing that pops up. It's
everywhere. Yes. So,
you know, I'm always telling people, if you want to find me, just Google Fluffy. And I guarantee you, I will be the first thing. I challenge you to try it. I beat quilts, comforters, cotton candy, bunny rabbits. It doesn't matter. Anything
I'm
Fluffy.
I'm going to try it.
Anything Fluffy. FLU. As soon as you hit FLU, there's like the flu, which is global. And then there's me.
There you go.
Fluffyguy.com. Let me show you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First thing.
Yeah.
That's
and
really
so
cool.
That's why I tell people, I don't send them to Instagram or nothing. I just go, just Google.
Just Google
one word. And so when people make fun of me and they go, really, Fluffy? Get mad all you want. You can hate all you want, but guess what?
It
people
works.
Remember.
Yeah.
It's a nickname. It's not a character name. It's a nickname. And so it's just part of the thing. Because people ask me all the time, well, do you have an actual real name? Real middle name? Because it's Gabriel Fluffy Iglesias for show business.
Yeah.
But my full name is Gabriel Jesus Iglesias. Very biblical for a very non-religious person. I don't know what my mom did, what guilt she had to name me that. But yeah, Gabriel Jesus Iglesias. On my dad's side, there's a bunch of mariachis and priests from Jalisco. And on my mom's side, from Sinaloa, I'll leave it at that. Yeah. It's very different. Very
sounds
different
fine.
Worlds.
And
right
we
there.
Will leave it at that.
Yeah, we will leave it at that.
Everybody, thank you for joining our show with the amazing comedian Gabriel Iglesias. You're watching this interview. Make sure you know on all streaming platforms. Don't forget to follow us on Todo Wafi, Todo Latino Show from the Pro Audio Studio LA. I'm Rafael. That is Gabriel. That is Yobi. That is Daisy. And we're out.